Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Oh, hello, it's Mike. It's Saturday. It's the Saturday show. And depending when on Saturday you're hearing this, Iowa, the Iowa Hawkeyes, might be playing today. Right now, Caitlin Clark. What a story. Will she get to the Final Four? Nate Silver's stats say no. I wouldn't bet against it, only because the odds don't give me a correct price. I think they're plus 130 to make the Final Four. And hey, women's basketball in the betting markets. That's great, right? It just goes to show that the women's game is in many ways more exciting than the men's, but not in any ways that are actually countable, discernible, or that square with the claims of the people who are saying it's doing much better. And that is my churlish mansplaining topic for today, because every week on the Saturday show, we bring you one from the week and one from the vaults. And I don't know why I keep beating this drum. I mean, I don't keep beating it, but I'm replaying it again. The women's tournament's great. I love it. I'm not giving it a condescending pat on the head. I'm just correcting the overinflation of how much better it's doing than the men's. Why can't we just have a very nice thing without lying about it, right? That's my basic thesis. The women's tournament's fantastic. Caitlin Clark is better to watch than almost everyone on San Diego State University that plays their games in the high 50s, okay? Much better. Love it. Glad they're doing well. They're not doing as well as the men. We don't have to lie about it to enjoy it. That is my thesis. And then the one from the vaults, the report or interview I did years ago, in keeping with the theme of March Madness. This is an interview from 2018. I talked to Barbara Lipska. Who is she? A small forward on Mount St. Mary's? No, she's a neuroscientist, but she had a brain tumor diagnosed in 2015. She studied damaged brains. And then she wound up having one. So why is it part of March Madness? Because the title of the book is The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind, My Tale of Madness and Recovery. Checks calendar. This is still barely March. Enjoy!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where it got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying, unflattering things about the war effort and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now the spiel. I love March Madness. These kids, they put it all on the line. And this year I'm most drawn to, most compelled by, the senior scoring star of a Big Ten powerhouse. What's his name? Well, it's not a him at all. Because that, my friends, was a bit of clever misdirection. I crossed you over. I broke your ankles. Because you thought I was going to name some Zach or Tristan or Jaden. Well, get ready. Have your mind blown. The best college basketball player in America is a woman. Okay, you knew that, right? I was talking down to you. I didn't blow your minds. You've been paying attention, somewhat attention. You saw the State Farm commercials. You know that Caitlin Clark is setting all kinds of scoring records for Iowa. I mean, she shoots from Cedar Rapids. It helps to know a bit of Iowa geography. Her gym's in Iowa City. It's about 30 miles away. I watched her last night, muscle pass West Virginia. I enjoyed her first round game against Holy Cross. I and 3 million other viewers. That was a record for ESPN. Caitlin Clark, along with the rest of women's college basketball, is having a moment. How big a moment? Let's have Caitlin Clark tell it.
I think also just in general, like, the excitement around this tournament, like, it's super cool. Like, people are more excited about the women's side than the men's side, and I think that's obviously something that's really never been the case before.
More excitement than the men. Now, excitement's ineffable. I think Caitlin Clark, to her, it's certainly terribly exciting, for sure. She's in a lot of ads. If she can keep those turnovers under control, she could get back to the Final Four, maybe win it all this time. Here's Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. He uses a metric slightly different from, though perhaps related to, excitement.
Certainly this year, it feels like the women's tournament is getting as much or more attention than the men's tournament, which is really the first time I can remember that.
Attention, a bit more empirical. We measure these things in eyeballs to sell to advertisers. Women's basketball did get more attention from the Today Explained podcast, where Ricky O'Donnell was interviewed. I mean, they didn't do a men's college basketball segment, nor should they have. But they did have this women's segment on where another guest, the Wall Street Journal's Lane Higgins, made this point about women's basketball not just rising, not just increasing, not just trending up, but trending in a more positive direction than the men's game. She says if you're a broadcaster or a media outlet, there's only one logical choice to make.
People are realizing if I have finite resources in 2024, I'm going to spend them on Caitlin Clark and not a no-name men's team.
That might be true. Clark's Iowa State Hawkeyes are a phenomenon. Other big teams like UConn, they got 2.5 million viewers for their game, and LSU also topped 2 million. Amazing stuff. But I refer you to the claim of more attention. Viewership is literally a measure of attention. And while those women's games got 2, and in Clark's case, 3 million viewers, Michigan State versus UNC, that got 10 million viewers. 18 men's games were more watched than Iowa. I think 5 of them more than twice as watched, or double the amount of people watch them. And we're including in the more watched such no-name men's teams as Grand Canyon, Oakland, and James Madison University. Sorry, Lopes, Oaks, and Dukes. Is Florida Atlantic University a name or a no-name? I don't know. If they're a name, it's only because they did well in last year's men's college basketball tournament. And this year, in the first round, their viewership was greater than that of Iowa's. The average men's first-round game drew over 10 million fans across all platforms, so it's a little bit different metric than the viewership metric I was quoting, but that is a record over the last decade, most since 2014, and not much on TV is setting records these days. The networks do not release the average data for women's games. They usually brag about their really well-watched programming, but they're under no obligation to release the average metric for a first round game, but I've done some math and it seems to be about a tenth of the men's viewership. actually a little less than that. In the first round of play, the lowest-rated men's game got over 400,000 viewers. The lowest-rated women's game, which included Texas, not a no-name, poorly attended school, that drew an audience of 36,000. On ESPN, it is free to fill out a bracket for the men and for the women's tournament. When you go on the site to fill out one, they have all these ads and inducements to fill out the other. 3 million people filled out women's brackets, which is great. 22 million filled out men's. There are caveats to all of this. The men's tournament benefits from more of a track history and more funding, and they were allowed to use the title March Madness. And it's also more popular in the early upset-prone stages. The average audience for the women's tournament builds in a way that the men's tournament doesn't. It's always been the case that first and second round men's games far outdraw women's games. And that's why you see the stories, and you saw them, and I quoted them on the show, about women's championship viewers up, men's down. That was true, but last year, in a pretty tight game between Caitlin Clark's Iowa and LSU, that drew 10 million viewers, and UConn versus San Diego State on the men's side, that blowout drew a disappointing 14 million viewers. Still, here's an article in Forbes before this year's tournament. Why the NCAA women's tournament is generating more excitement than the men's. Is it because media keeps saying it is and using this hard to pin down concept of excitement? Here's a quote. Although this is only their third year, women can use the March Madness moniker. Their tournament is generating as much, if not more, enthusiasm than the men's. And unlikely sources like crowd-sized ticket prices and gushing sports announcers prove it. Now, if gushing sports announcers proved anything, you'd have a lot of research papers accompanied by a home run call. The null hypothesis is up. It is rejected. But many of the women's first round games do not sell out in the NCAA tournament, even though the games are home games for certain teams, because organizers rightly worry that neutral site games would not sell out. The men's tournament is all held at neutral sites. The NCAA tournament game, to take one example, for the Indiana Hoosiers women's team drew 12,753. A random men's game, a regular season game for the men, draws 17,000. Ticket prices right now on StubHub, the women's session East Regional 1, cheapest seat in the house, $35. You could see a Sweet 16 tournament game up there in Albany. Men's session, Region 1, this one's in Boston, $216. The cost of living or entertainment is not eight times that in Boston as Albany. And I love Caitlin Clark. I've watched all her games. I watched a close Iowa State-Stanford game. I'll definitely watch women's basketball. I'll certainly watch men's basketball. Why does this overstatement about the popularity of women's basketball, why does it have to turn me into this sort of churlish mansplainer? People listening are surely saying, oh, Mike, why is it so important? Oh, Mike, can't just let the women have their moment. Oh, Mike, are you so fragile that this is such a big deal? No, I think of it differently. What I would like to do is properly celebrate an amazing run, an achievement, an ascendancy without engaging in going overboard, lies, hyperbole, that sort of thing. It gets in my way, and maybe someone else's way, of properly marveling in the achievement. Lying about the achievement doesn't make me feel any better about the achievement. Can't we just be honest about things? Can't we do this in this one arena, this literal arena, which, if Caitlin Clark is playing in it, will be full of screaming fans? And if any of her male counterparts are playing, will be full of fans. Maybe they're not screaming. Maybe they're not as excited. Maybe they're grousing about their broken brackets. You know, three times many of them filled out a bracket. Maybe that's why there's less excitement. Most of them lost. So just consider this modest proposal, if you care. If you care to know about the rise of women's college basketball, know that it's enormous and impressive. And compared to the men, they're on a better trajectory. Maybe we just leave it at that. Barbara Lipska is a world-renowned neuroscientist. She is the director of the Human Brain Collection Core at the National Institutes of Mental Health and a recognized expert on schizophrenia. It was not until, however, she began experiencing her own symptoms of brain tumors that she really began to understand what is going on in this field that she had established her expertise in. The memoir of this is called The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind, My Tale of Madness and Recovery. Hello, Barbara Lipska.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's take our listeners to the first time you began to have symptoms that you recognized as being affected by what you thought might be a brain tumor. Because I know you had cancer before then, if I'm getting that right, but this is the first time It showed up in the form of what you recognized pretty early to be a brain tumor. Tell us about that.
That's right. So what happened, I thought I am an invincible person. I was an athlete, a marathoner, a triathlete. I ate healthy always, all my life. Nothing is going to happen to me. And I studied mental illnesses for my entire professional career, over 40 years now. First in my native Poland, and then in the U.S. at the Institute of Mental Health, National Institute of Mental Health. So one day, I'm coming out of the pool thinking that something is a little off. I was a little dizzy. I thought maybe I didn't eat enough. I went to my car. I got inside. I drove to NIH, which was about 20 miles, and put my hands on the keyboard. And I tried to turn on my computer, but my right hand disappeared, vanished.
Did it seem as if there was a dark spot in your vision, or your vision was the full panorama? Yeah, yeah.
No hand, cut off at the wrist. Whatever was in the right lower quadrant of my visual field, I was missing.
And so you, because of your training and expertise, said what to yourself?
Actually, my expertise didn't play any role at this moment. It was so terrifying. Such a freaky thing that I didn't think really logically. The first thing that appeared in my mind was a tumor, but only because I had breast cancer several years before in 2009. So all this was happening in January of 2015. So we're talking 6 years before I had breast cancer. And I had melanoma on my skin in 2011, December, so basically 2012, 3 years before. So I kind of put these things together, but the moment I thought tumor, I expelled that thought from my brain. It was too terrifying, too deadly. I didn't want to deal with it. Next day, it turned out that I do have three brain tumors.
Three.
One in my visual cortex, responsible for that vision field. And we were sure that it will not end with the radiation. It will not end with surgery. I will die if we don't do something very special. And this very special thing was supposed to be immunotherapy.
And that did work, but that led to, well, the title of the book and your experiences.
Yes, because it worked almost too well in me.
Mm-hmm. It saved your life, but it left you with tumors that you didn't recognize for what they were. Am I right?
Yes. So my behavior started changing gradually during immunotherapy. It didn't happen from one day to another, but I was slowly but surely losing emotions. I was losing empathy. I was yelling at my husband. I was yelling at all my beloved family members, including my grandsons. I didn't have emotions. I stopped loving my husband. I stopped loving my grandkids. I didn't know what was happening to me.
So what does that say about the notion that I've often heard, that love, we could ascribe some positivity to it. But, you know, people say what it really is you have a shot of adrenaline or cortisol. It's a chemical reaction, especially at first. Or they'll even talk about, you know, when we see a cute baby or a cute kid, that triggers something in us, some instinct. You know, people will explain away these emotions as just being chemicals in your brain. You went through a period where literal chemicals in your brain were getting in the way of that love. So maybe it calls into question minimizing what love is as just a series of chemicals.
Yes, I think it is. I am a materialist. I am a scientist. I believe that everything who we are, everything about us is in the brain, is physical. So I lost part of the brain that is critical for these emotions, empathy, these what we think higher order feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And they disappeared. They disappeared because they were squashed by the tumors and swelling in my brain.
Did all your family members and people in your life whose feelings you perhaps hurt forgive you eventually or immediately?
They forgave me immediately. They were even not cross when I was doing it. They were an incredibly loving family. My husband, my children, my sister and her family, they were all around me trying to help me. No one realized that I had these tumors that are causing my strange behaviors, but they knew that I was suffering. They thought that I was very stressed out.
Yeah. Did it take longer for you to forgive yourself after you regained your mind and were told about
the way you were? I never forgave myself. But
why not? I mean, if anyone in the world should, it should be someone with your insight as to the mechanical nature, as you said, of the human mind.
Yeah, and I'm spreading this message that no one should feel guilty because she is ill. It is an illness like any other illness, like an illness of heart, of kidney, of liver. It is just the illness of the brain. So if the brain stops functioning and we stop realizing what is happening around us or with us, within us, we should not be considered guilty for the behaviors that are inappropriate or even hurtful.
Mm. And was your interest in schizophrenia and the study of the brain, was there a large empathetic portion to it, or was it more like a puzzle to unlock? Were you feeling for the person suffering in the throes of this disease, or was it more of an intellectual exercise before you went through it?
I think it was more intellectual because it was almost impossible to understand how it can feel. Now I do.
Yeah.
It is like observing in a movie a foreign country versus visiting it and living there
right.
and understanding it better.
Right. I get that. Do you think that for the pure researcher, that bit of empathy helps their research?
I think it helps tremendously. Not that I wasn't a passionate scientist before, I was, but it added a lot. I understand the urgency of having us really understand mental illness. We need definitely more funding. Look at what happened in cancer research. Over many years, cancer has been funded and advocated for a lot more than mental illness. They have stronger advocates. They have more funding. It gave rise, after decades and decades of research, to what I benefited from, immunotherapy, which is a great breakthrough in cancer. Hopefully, we'll do the same with mental illness, but it involves the brain, which is a lot more complicated. It involves behaviors, which are a lot more difficult to examine than the growth or disappearance of a tumor. So I think we have just a lot more difficult puzzle to solve in mental illness. But it will be solved, I'm sure. It just requires time and money.
Yeah. I do have one last question. I am glad, I'm heartened that your family was supportive throughout all of this. But you did fire the pest control guy for trying to poison you. And all he was trying to do was eradicate vermin and pests. Did he ever forgive you?
He was not fired. My husband called him and said, no, 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 just forgive her. My husband saved me.
If you could get the Orkin man to forgive you, then anything is possible. Barbara Lipska is the author of and the subject of The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind, My Tale of Madness and Recovery. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
The Gist is produced by Corey Wara and Joel Patterson. Quaint Mallards, they are known as. A Monday after, I predict the Hawkeyes are still in the tournament, but maybe not for the next couple of days. I will talk to you.